Hello, and welcome to Science Unscripted. It's Connor here.
And Gabe.
Gabe, I believe you have emails from some of our many listeners around the world.
We got one from Canada, right off the bat here. Gabe and Connor.
The good email or the bad email?
This is the best email. One of the best ones we've gotten in a while. I heard you this week read an email from fellow Canadian Deanna about her getting up at 3 a.m. to listen to Science Unscripted. I work shift work in an underground nickel mine, and on my way home after night shift, I hear SU at 4:30 a.m. on my Saturday commute. My drive is about 40 minutes, and Science Unscripted on CBC Radio usually accompanies my journey for most of it. I have subscribed to your podcast so I don't miss an episode when my schedule doesn't give me my drive home, with your airing in the land of moose and maple syrup. Keep up the great work, and I look forward to the end of September when your excellent and informative show follows me home. Adam Cottery.
A
nickel mine? What's that like?
Yeah.
Adam?
Adam, if you're listening to this one, feel free to send us an email. Yeah, that was my first thought. What is that like to be in a nickel mine? That's the one thought. The other thought is just how really, truly, deeply wonderful it is for Gabe and me to be able to imagine. And the image might be more beautiful than reality. Imagine someone driving home. It's the middle of the night. It's dark. And with these sounds coming out of the car's speakers, there is something special about listening to the radio in a car as opposed to with headphones on.
I always thought about that when Gus the Paperboy would write to us. The idea of us accompanying him on his paper route, also in the middle of the night on Sunday mornings, also in Canada, just amazing.
Sounds are different when it's dark.
Yeah.
That may be part of it. Sound has a stronger impact when there's less visual information coming at you.
Yeah. Also, we hadn't heard from Adam ever. Imagine how many other people there are in this world who listen to us. We had listeners from...
Oh, yeah. I should say hello, first of all, to all of our many new listeners, primarily out of India and Pakistan. We talked on one of our recent episodes about symbiosexuality. Symbiosexuality is a new definition for the sexual attraction a surprising amount of people do appear to feel for a couple.
That has already been established.
Yes. Not
two people, you want both of them.
You want both of them and the energy between them, their shared outlook on the world, the being with them is just special. You might not even be able to define why. I think that's probably more likely the case. And in the Harvard Pleasure Study, it was roughly 40% of people who said, yes, I felt something like that before. Symbiosexuality. And
based on our analytics, we had a lot of people listening, new listeners from India who were interested in that particular piece.
India, Pakistan, Brazil. So to all of you who have just come across Science Unscripted for the very first time because of symbiosexuality.
Welcome.
Welcome. Yeah. And if you have any thoughts on symbiosexuality, su@dw.com, that's how you can send them our way.
Yeah.
We'll repeat that again later. But hello and welcome to all of you.
We were just talking about Canada real quick. I made a geographical mistake, apparently.
A grave error.
Last week.
A grave error.
I must have said that the capital of Manitoba was something else other than Winnipeg, or that Manitoba was in Saskatchewan. I didn't mean that. I know the difference between Saskatchewan and Manitoba. I'm just a little scatterbrained. I'm so sorry, Alan.
Oh, yeah, Alan. Ooh. Yeah, Alan wrote into
Thank
us about
you for,
that.
For correcting that mistake. Sorry about that. It'll never happen again.
How polite.
The difference between Manitoba and Saskatchewan, never make that mistake.
You are good with stuff like that. And how polite of the rest of you not to write in and call us out on that. That was also really nice. Yeah. Very, very polite of you. I have one, speaking of YouTube, a YouTube comment that I'm going to read out. It's more of an update on something we talked about before. Gabe, this will possibly ring a bell. Kachira. I don't know if that means anything to you. Kachira 2012.
We read one of her comments before?
Yeah, she had a comment on one of our previous episodes.
On the Norwegian study, right? The double standard?
We read her comment out loud
in
the same episode where we, speaking of sexuality, where we talked about double standards.
Being reversed up in Norway and not in Germany? Or
if someone has recently had more sexual partners, or a few sexual partners, then what people think society thinks is that the women would be judged more harshly for that, when in truth, what the Norwegian study appears to show is that at the individual level, if you ask me, how do I feel about that? Women are judged less harshly for it, and men are judged more harshly for that recent sexual activity. Mm-hmm. So, flip or a flop or whatever you want to call it. Anyway, we read her her YouTube comment out there.
Yeah.
And then I suggested, because of her name, because of her YouTube handle, that it ends with 2012, that she's probably a young listener, maybe born in 2012. That would make her what?
That's a fair enough.
12.
That's a...
And do you remember what you said back to me?
No.
You said, well, maybe she just likes the year 2012.
Yeah.
Which I thought, I think I laughed at it because it's a ridiculous... I don't know how many people have a special year in mind. Like, well, yeah, I don't know. 2012 was kind of fun.
I mean, I really like 1995.
I do too. But she responded. She listened and responded. And she wrote, 2012 is not actually my birth year.
Yeah.
I'm 31.
Yeah.
So I wrote her back on YouTube. Kachira, thanks for checking in, even if this means my assumption was wrong.
Yeah.
And I basically asked her, what was it then? What was 2012 about? And she wrote, I would say it was just a fun year where me being a teen found news like the world is ending in 2012 to be so outlandish and funny. And it was basically, it confirmed what you said. It was a great year.
Yeah.
2012 was one of her favorite years. And then I wrote her back and said...
And you must have thought that me saying that was outlandish.
I thought that was outlandish. I thought that was ridiculous.
Well, maybe you're being outlandish from time to time.
I should trust you more.
Right.
I should trust you a lot more.
Science time. What do we do? I got names. What do you...
Well, you've got some fast twitch muscles, I believe.
Oh, that's a shout out to Kathy. Sorry. We got a question. A science question from one of our listeners. What is the difference between fast twitch and slow twitch muscles, and how do we know which type we have? Kathy, we have both types. Everyone has both types. Some people have more of one of the types depending on what activity they are really good at. Weightlifters, anyone who needs explosive power from their muscles probably has more fast twitch muscles. Endurance runners like Connor over here probably have more slow twitch muscles, because there is a difference between the two. One of them is used for very quick, explosive outbursts of power that can't go on for a long time. The other ones can do the same thing for a long, long time. Slow twitch muscles. And that's pretty much the answer. I mean, there's nothing more to say about it.
I was going to say, it comes up a lot in sports. And now that you're saying this out loud, I've never heard anyone get examined for fast twitch versus slow twitch.
You could have each individual fiber of your muscles tested for it to see the percent, but I don't know what that would do for you, because you would know based on what you are good at and what you can do, which ones you have.
Yeah. Right? And let's assume you've either won the genetic lottery or haven't, or you're like most people, you're somewhere in between. It's probably, on a day-to-day basis, not as relevant as pursuing those exercise activities and trying to strengthen yourself in a way that makes sense for your life.
Kat, if you want to train one of them, there is one way to train them in your legs, plyometric exercises where you do a lot of jumping, box jumping, jumping from side to side. That's a way to train those muscles. Mm-hmm. Or if you want to do them in your arms, you could do push-ups where you, instead of just doing them normally and slow, you do them really fast and try and push yourself up. That would be one way to do it.
But I'm just kind of stuck on the idea or the question of whether how many adults need to be able to jump well.
I guess it depends on what you're doing.
How often does an adult jump on a day-to-day basis? Jump. Probably, you know what I mean? No, sorry.
Good question. Good question.
But just to get back to the idea of train what you need, mm-hmm. right? That's different than what other people need. And for me, I like going out and jogging. When I do that, I'm training for it, and that makes sense for my life, whereas, you know, something very, very different might be what you want to be good at. Is it flexibility? Is it bending over and getting under things, or clambering over things? A lot of different things in there. Real quick, news. Some news. And I'm going to start off with a little bit of audio here. And to kind of contextualize it, I'll take a tweet that was posted by astronaut Chris Hadfield, who was up on the International Space Station, a very charismatic guy, played music up there, very good with the media. He said, you know what, there are several noises that I would prefer not to hear inside my spaceship, right, if you're up in space, including this one, that Boeing Starliner, which was attached to the International Space Station, is now making. Thank you.
if I didn't know any better, I'd say that's aliens.
That, right? There's nothing worse that you could possibly hear when you're somewhat isolated in low Earth orbit. And it, how horrifying. You can, online, you can find the entire exchange between one of the astronauts. His name is Butch Wilmore. He basically got in contact with NASA and he's like, what is this? What's going on? And he found a way so that they could listen to it in real time. I think some people, ham operators, who listened to all that communication, recorded this and then posted the whole thing online. That's why it's a news story.
What is the sound?
According to NASA, this is what I suspected it was from the beginning. This got a lot of attention online because I'll get to in a sec. Boeing Starliner has had lots of issues.
Yeah.
This is a speaker feedback error. And so the Boeing Starliner is a separate capsule. It docked on to the International Space Station, and they have various cables and audio setups where one communicates with the other. Something got stuck on a feedback, on a loop. Anyone who's played around with speakers, sometimes if you get a microphone too close to a speaker, it can start looping in and on itself. They solved it. And again, by the time all of you are listening to this, it depends when you're listening to this, that Boeing capsule should already be back on the ground without the astronauts. That's the big news story.
Yeah.
This thing has been a disaster. They've been up there for 2 months now. They were only supposed to be up there for a week.
How long are they supposed, or are they going to be stuck up there, trapped?
According to SpaceX, which is launching the rocket and the Dragon capsule, which will go up there and pick them up and bring them back, that launch is going to happen in late September. And the return mission back down, bringing them back down to Earth, is going to be February. NASA's a little bit more vague. They're saying spring. That's the plan, but this is a kind of a black eye for Boeing and its Starliner mission that they are working on rectifying.
All right, thanks for that bit of news. A study on names. Unbelievable findings, I think, that your name probably changes the appearance of your face.
I've seen people with names tattooed on their faces, but I'm assuming that's not what this is about.
They did a bunch of experiments in Herzliya, Israel, in the first set of experiments, hundreds of people, and they showed them headshots of adults and headshots of kids, and asked them to guess the name of the adult face and guess the name of the child's face. Gave them four different options.
So I don't. Oh, that I was gonna say because there's so many names out there. But you can select between four.
Yeah, and the statistically it was significant. The people were able to guess the adult face, the name of the adult face, way better than they were the child's face.
Mm-hmm.
So you're given Scott, Connor, John, and Timothy.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, based on the adult face. More what the name of that face was compared to the kid.
Because of my name, I tend to dress and look differently. I grow into my name. I become that.
For whatever reason, it was easier for people to know that face is Connor.
Yeah, but the only way, not the only way, but one of the only ways is if you think that, or you become aware as an adult, right, that Gabriel has Gabriel has a certain feeling attached to it, and whether or not you know it, you begin adopting that persona.
has a certain haircut, smiles more. The more you smile, the more your facial features change over time. They took it to the next level and used machine learning to compare all kinds of different faces with certain names to see if those were similar compared to other faces. So they looked at all the Connors in this set of 600 different faces and wanted to see similarities between all the Connors compared to all the other faces. And this is called a Siamese neural network. And again, statistically significant, there was a 60% similarity lift amongst all the faces with a certain name compared to the other
names. But there, hold on a sec. There, my name is Connor because way back when, my Irish ancestors wandered over to the United States. And so there should be similarity between the Connors out there if there's a connection back to the source of that name. Do you know what I mean?
If that's the reason why people named their kid Connor, then yeah.
There's also, my name came partially from a book published back when I was born, Leon Uris, and one of the main characters was named Connor. So that would have, spread through society, but still probably more of the people who had a connection to Ireland or, yeah, I don't know, wanted to reference their Irish ancestry in that case would have latched onto that. But I guess what I'm trying to say with a lot of words, yeah, that makes more sense to me than people being able to guess someone's name unless it's also connected to that, unless there's some sort of genetic aspect to it. Like your name, your middle name is Leif,
yeah,
right?
Leif.
Leif.
That one would make sense. But for the Bobs and the Tims and the Bonnies and the Catherines,
right,
then I'm not sure that that applies. The next thing they did, and I know that you have experience with this, they used software to artificially create adults out of children's faces.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Right? Yeah, I've used those apps.
And then they asked 100 people to guess the names of those fake adults with the face created by the children's face,
mm-hmm,
and they weren't able to guess them compared to actual people.
Because the software is not good enough to replicate what actually happens to the human, how it changes
that
over time
is, in the end,
to
that's
reflect
the
name.
In the question, does your face change over time? Let's say my name's Gabriel. Do I don't know, comb my hair in a certain way because I'm Gabriel, because that's the way a Gabriel lives?
Yeah. Or
do
like,
I learn? Does my face learn how to look over time?
Or do you have like wings from your hair because the archangel Gabriel also had wings?
I don't think.
Is that possible?
I don't think that's what's going on.
Could be. So am I understanding you? Open question. We don't know why this is the case, which is always interesting.
No idea.
What do you listeners think is happening here?
Yeah.
I can't figure it out. What is happening there?
It's statistically way too significant it's way more than random chance. Like these people were able to guess the names of faces more than they should have been.
What is going on there? SU@DW.com. Real quick here. Final piece of science. I'm going to call up the sounds, the beautiful sounds of the marmoset monkey. And just be forewarned, they're small monkeys, which means small vocal cords. So very high-pitched sounds. If any of our listeners are sensitive to high-pitched noises, almost in like the mosquito range, might be a time to turn the volume down or stop the podcast or YouTube video, whatever you're doing. Mm. But these are marmosets here. Beautiful sounds. These, again, small monkeys, about 20 centimeters, so 8 inches high. The smallest monkeys around.
Petite.
Very petite monkeys. And they're generally found close to the Amazon, so in South America. I first came into contact with them. I like these animals a lot ever since going through the Cologne Zoo right close by. And I was actually looking at the gorillas and the orangutans in there. And then I turned around and was like, what? Okay, there's a little cage here, but what's in there? Pygmy marmosets. These things are so small. If you've seen the, I think it's a 1980s movie, Flight of the Navigator.
No.
One of those children's movies, in quotation marks, kind of like E.T. the Extraterrestrial, where...
I've seen that one.
As a kid, you're traumatized afterwards. Like, it gets intense.
Yeah.
And he has this little alien with him, and it's so small and super cute. Nowadays, it would be computer-generated, but back then, it was like a real thing. And these are about that size. They're very, very small. I love these things. These animals, marmosets, the bigger ones, the 8-inch guys, they live in groups of 3 to 15. And what researchers, coincidentally, out of Israel, out of Jerusalem, Hebrew University, what they have found out is, speaking of names, they have names for each other. This is a first in non-human primates. So if you think of all the primates out there, you've got chimpanzees, you've got orangutans, gorillas, all of them. This is the first time we've ever established that a non-human primate calls out to another one using its name.
And that sound we just heard, that could have been one of these marmosets calling the name of a different marmoset?
Yeah. So they were. They established that definitively. And what they did is they separated marmosets and then looked to see if certain marmosets were reacting to recorded audio calls in a certain way of their name. They established that this is probably the name of one of the monkeys. Mm-hmm. They had their own names for them. And in this clip here, you're going to hear it twice, but in this clip, you're going to hear a monkey or a marmoset named Adonis.
Yeah.
And the first call is going to be toward another marmoset called Ceto,
mm-hmm,
also a Greek goddess. The other one right after it is to a different one called Dia. And the reason I'm saying that is human ears can hear the difference in names, which is kind of crazy.
All right, let's hear it.
Okay, so let me jump in.
I just
in
heard
here.
Four noises. The first two.
The first one's like. And the other one's like.
Ah. The cadence goes down.
There's something different about it. And it took me, the researcher, the researcher guy, lead researcher emailed me, and he was the one who first pointed out, look, you really can hear this. Mm-hmm. And it took me a bit, but I got used to it. And now I'll just do it one more time. I'll reverse them. So now it's going to be calling Dia first and Cito second. See if you can hear the difference. Yeah, I don't know if you can pick up on that, but there's a slight difference. And I bet if you spent enough time in a lab with the same animals around you, you might start knowing when they were calling each other, which is a wild idea.
I hear the difference between the sounds, but how do they know that's a name?
It's connected to how the animals respond, in the same way that if somebody called John, you would sit there and not move. But yeah. If somebody says Gabe, you would probably suddenly get alert. It's how the animal responds to that particular call, okay, which is different than other calls that may be connected to looking for sources of food or anything else.
And as far as we know, no other animal does this?
No. Sorry, I should be clear on that. This is the first time it's ever happened with a non-human primate.
Got it.
Elephants do this. This was very recently established.
Yeah. Just a study out of Austria, right?
No, there was a different one just a couple months back that looked specifically at elephant names. I think the one out of Austria was about elephant vocabulary, yeah, which is slightly different. And dolphins. Those are the other two animals that do this. We've talked on the show before about parakeets down in Barcelona. And they do
calls for dinner? What was that?
Yeah. Parakeets down. So these are monk parakeets. What they do is they have a unique voice print, meaning in the same way, I think the way we talked about it before was if you were a kid and then someone walks out and says, Gabe,
yeah,
that you would know who's...
You know, that's the dinner bell.
And that's because they have a unique voice print. So like there are a wider variety of animals. I think quite a few birds, bats, also dolphins, where the voice print is, it's clear who's talking. What we now know is that with marmosets,
specific names are being said and each has its own auditory.
Yeah. Right. Because imprint. Of course you live in a group of 3 to 15 people. You're highly social animals. They're small. They're probably very vulnerable. It's useful to look over there and be like, hey, you, Amanda, mm-hmm, Bill, or
Herschel,
to reference a German TikToker who goes through the lists of the names here in Germany that are allowed. Germany has strict rules on who can be named what. Mm-hmm. It's different than other countries. And one name that recently came through the regulation or the regulatory bodies there was a young boy whose first name is Jim. And then there's a hyphen. This is still his first name. Jim Panza.
Jim Panza, like chimpanzee?
Like chimpanzee.
Yeah.
And then it led to a discussion, why was this allowed? Usually German authorities don't allow those kinds of names to come through because it could lead to a lifetime of difficulties and ridicule.
Well, maybe, yeah, Panza has a specific meaning for that.
That's true.
Guy.
You never know. That could be as well. Yeah, so again, marmosets, first non-human primate that call each other by name. Does your name, again, open question, does your name change the shape of your face or appearance really over time, your facial appearance, the appearance of your whole head over time? And best of luck to the astronauts aboard the International Space Station for much longer than they expected.
February.
To Butch, to Suni, to U.S. astronauts up there. They're doing fine for now, expected to come back in February. And that's it for now. Yeah. Keep sending your emails and leaving YouTube comments.
Yeah.
SU@DW.com.
That's the email address.
Yeah. Till next time.
Science Unscripted.